another speaking engagement afterwards. We really, really appreciate Rabbi Lieberman speaking for us and being available. We are really looking forward to this year. And I just wanted to mention in advance the sponsors for this year. Sarah and Joe Fink, the Mizell's family, in honor of their parents, grandparents, and children. Anonymously, Eloy Nishmas, Mordechai Hertz, Ben Shainzel, and Espes for Fua Shalima for Gutza Bas Gitzel. And also anonymously, Lizkos for Fua Shalima for Esther Tehila Bas Ariel Tzipora. So without further ado, Rabbi Leibowitz, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming to learn together. And the last minute change to, or not so last minute, but the change to Zoom, I realize it's a different type of interaction over Zoom. Bez Hashem, we should be able to share Torah many times over Zoom, in person, in all different types of contexts. Now, this is a bit of an unusual spot, not only because it's on Zoom, but also because my assignment was to speak about Tu B'Shvat. Now, that is a little bit unusual. It's a bit of a difficult challenge for a couple of reasons. First reason that it's a difficult challenge is that Tu B'Shvat has already passed. It's already over. And there's always a sense, after Yom Tov ends, after a particular Zman is over, that, as Chazal say, Over Zmano, Batel Karbano, that once the Zman is over, so we no longer think about that that holiday anymore. We'll think about it again in about 11 months, or, you know, in this case, 12 months and about 3 weeks, you know, in the last week before Tu B'Shvat next year. So it's difficult to make Tu B'Shvat engaging at this point in time. And the second challenge in talking about Tu B'Shvat is that normally I always like to speak about either halacha or hashkafa that's built on Torah Nigla, that's built on the parts of Torah that I personally have access to. And when it comes to Tu B'Shvat, there is very, very little in Torah Sanigla that that we can really speak about, at least in Chutz La'aretz. See, from a halachic perspective, this is about as minor a festival as we can possibly have. What it does is it marks the, you know, you ever wonder what it means? It's a Rosh Hashanah for trees. Trees don't celebrate Rosh Hashanah. Trees don't dip the apple in the honey. They have plenty of apples. They don't have so much honey. Whatever, the trees that have the apples don't have the honey. The ones that have the Dvash Tamarim don't have the apples. So what does it mean that a tree celebrates a Rosh Hashanah? All it really means, it's a very halachic, it's a technical halachic issue. It marks the cutoff point between fruits of 1 year and fruits of the next year. Which means that it's important to know, if you live in Eretz Yisrael and you're taking Trumas HaMaisos, it's important to know which year your fruit is from. Why is it important to know? Because if your fruit grew in the first, second, fourth, or fifth year of the Shemitah cycle, in addition to taking Truma Gedola and giving Maaser Rishon, you also have to take Maaser Sheni and bring that fruit to Yerushalayim and eat it there. Whereas, if it were in the third or sixth year of the Shemitah cycle, then instead of Maaser Sheni, you'd have Maaser Ani. You would give 10% to poor people. So in order to know what your biblical obligations are, what your Chiyuv D'Oraisa is, with regard to that fruit, you need to know what year that fruit is from. Nowadays, no one's giving Maaser Sheni, no one's giving Maaser Ani, and certainly in Chutz La'aretz, we're not doing any of that, and it's not even a Chiyuv in Chutz La'aretz at any point. So what does this mean to us? So you know what Tu B'Shvat means to us in Chutz La'aretz? It means that we don't say Tachnun on Tu B'Shvat. So for us this year, that worked out very nicely because Tu B'Shvat was on a Monday, and when we get to skip Tachnun on a Monday, that is a big deal. You may have noticed that people walking out of shuls on Monday, they weren't walking, they were skipping out of shul as if they just had the greatest thing in the world happen to them. That was because they got to skip the long Tachnun on Monday. That's what Tu B'Shvat means to us from a halachic perspective. As a child, experientially, what does Tu B'Shvat mean to us? So as a child, I remember what it meant to us was that we got a little bag of dried fruit in school, and we got to throw buxer around the room to see if we could crack it by throwing it as hard as we can against the wall. And sometimes there was like almost like a mini Fear Factor type of competition that broke out in the class where different boys, a few brave souls, would try to actually eat the stuff and see if it would break their teeth or they would break the buxer. And that's experientially what Tu B'Shvat was. Admittedly, though, Kabbalistically, and particularly in the Hasidic world, this day, that day of Tu B'Shvat, takes on much more significant importance. It's considered to be something that's of very great significance. I've never seen a Tu B'Shvat Seder in person, like a real Tu B'Shvat Seder, but I do have Twitter, so I've seen images from different Hasidic dishes that they have on Tu B'Shvat, and it looks magnificent. They have like these massive tables filled with the most beautiful fruit platters you could ever imagine. Usually the Rebbe of that Hasidic sect is meditating over the fruit platters, sometimes trembling over the fruit platters. I don't know what he's thinking. I don't know what he's doing. It doesn't even look like the same religion, but it's the same. It's based in the same kernel that Tu B'Shvat is Rosh Hashanah Le'Ilanos. Those who are more familiar with Torah Sanistar apparently see something very, very significant, to the point that it's worth meditating over and calling a whole tish and bringing all the Hasidim together in order to have some sort of major experiential event related to the fruit, but it is not a ritual that we could recognize from Shas or from Shulchan Aruch. It's clearly based on some area of Torah that most of us do not have access to. So instead of talking about Tu B'Shvat per se, let's talk about fruits in general. What does fruit mean for us? And this is not going to be a nutrition class. I want to talk about, from a Jewish perspective, what is the significance of Peiros Ha'ilan, of fruits that grow in a tree. And I want to share with you, and perhaps slightly expand upon, an idea that I saw from Rav Aaron Lapiansky Shlita in his Sefer Timepieces, which is a beautiful Sefer of essays in English about each of the different Yom Tovim, and they added on a number of Hespedim that Rav Lapiansky put in there as well, and another a number of other Hashkafic articles that he wrote. But he has one piece on Tu B'Shvat where he doesn't discuss Tu B'Shvat per se. What he discusses is this very idea of Peiros Ha'ilan. What do fruit trees mean to us? And what he points out is that in Torah, there are a lot of different categories and a lot of distinctions that we make. You know, one of the fundamentals of learning Torah is that we need to know how to categorize things, because you can't just take the massive amount of Torah information that there is and just try to absorb it all. It's much easier for us when we know what boxes to put things in, when we know how to put things into different categories. It helps us remember, it helps us understand, oh, that's a mitzvah, what kind of mitzvah is it? Is it a mitzvah saseh or a mitzvah lo saseh? Is it a mitzvah d'oraisa or a mitzvah d'rabanan? Is it a mitzvah ben adam l'chad or a mitzvah ben adam l'makom? And by making those different types of categories, we understand, we have a little bit more of a tfisa of Torah Hashem. We can understand the Ribbono Shel'Olam's Torah a little bit more. Even within the world of Kedusha, there's Kedushas Damim and Kedushas Aguf. There's Kachim Kachim and Kachim Kalim. There's Tashmishe Mitzvah and Tashmishe Kedusha. We always look to make categories, but one of the more peculiar categories, one of the more unusual distinctions that we make, is the distinction that we make in halacha between fruits and vegetables. Those don't seem to be two different categories. You know, you have such a thing as a vegetarian, right? So a vegetarian will only eat what? Fruits and vegetables. A vegan, let's say. Vegan also is even more limited, but still, they'll eat both fruits and vegetables. Is there such a thing as a person who eats only fruits or only vegetables? Maybe there is, but I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. That a movement, you know, I don't think the vegan ashkacha, you know, will take away ashkacha if you have a fruit as opposed to a vegetable. I mean, fruits and vegetables in the world are the exact same category. In the world at large, fruits and vegetables are not. Granted, you have gluten-free, but that's just gluten. It's not really even about grain. It's about a particular component of the grain, and because, for whatever health reasons. The idea that we would distinguish between fruits and vegetables, and for that matter, grain, is somewhat difficult to understand. Why would there be halachic distinctions? And there are halachic distinctions. The distinction between, let's say, meat, eggs, and cheese on the one hand, and fruits, vegetables, and grains on the other hand, that makes perfect sense. It's logical, for example, that the bracha you would say on an apple should be different than the bracha you would say on a brisket, right? A brisket comes from a cow, I believe, and an apple comes from a tree, I'm pretty confident. So those, it makes sense that those will be two different brachos. But when you have multiple things that grow from the ground, you have grain that grows from the ground, you have apples that grow from the ground, you have red peppers that grow from the ground, you have cucumbers that grow from the ground. Why is it that there are three different brachos for things that grow from the ground? There's bari mina mizonos, there's bari priya adama, and there's bari priya eitz. Now, to be sure, the difference between fruits and vegetables is far less pronounced than the difference between fruits and grains, in that really bari priya adama would work on peros ilan as well. And we only distinguish because Baruch Hashem Yom Yom Kol Min V'Min Tein Lo Me'in Berchosav. Whenever we give a bracha, whenever we say a bracha to Hashem, we always try to be as specific as possible. So I get that that we'll try to have a little bit of a different nusach for peros and for vegetables, but even though they're roughly the same category. But when it comes to fruit versus grain, an entirely different category of bracha. Bari Minei Mizonos has nothing to do with Bari Priya Eitz. Why is it that grain is its own category, separate from the category of fruit? They both grow from the ground. You think even beyond that. Ilanos in particular, trees in particular, seem to be singled out as something that's uniquely special. There's a special bracha that we say when we see a tree that's about to produce its fruit. When it starts to bud in Chodesh Nisan, a person goes out, the Gemara says in Maseches Brachos, and it's Halacha Pesukah in Shulchan Aruch, and you'll see if you have neighbors that have fruit trees. I guess in Washington Heights you don't have neighbors that have fruit trees, but if you go to other communities where people have, you know, grass and trees. So if you have a neighbor that has a fruit tree, and they're from people, they'll very often hang the sign on the tree that has the bracha of the that you're supposed to say on the ilanos. It's a special bracha for ilanos. We say ki adam eitz hasoda, that a person is like a tree. Why is a person like a tree and a person not like a grain? Why isn't a person like a wheat? Why is a person like a tree and not like wheat? What is it about ilanos that single them out, that make them different than other vegetation? Furthermore, when Adam was created, Adam was permitted to eat mikol eitz hagan, which means he was a herbivorous creature. He ate whatever grew from the ground. He did not eat any meat at that point. Adam was a vegetarian. It was only after the mabul that he became an omnivore. It was only after the mabul that Adam started to eat meat and chicken and things like that. Interestingly, the Ramban in Sefer Bereishis tells us animals were the same way. Up until the Mabul, animals only ate fruits and vegetables. Yet, Chazal tell us, when Hashem punished Adam, that he would have to eat as Esev Hasada, the Pasuk says. Hashem tells, Hashem, after the Chet of the Etz Hadas, Hashem discusses what the consequences are going to be with each of the three major parties that were involved in the Etz Hadas. Right? So he has a little talk with the Nachash, and then a little talk with Chava, and then a little talk with Adam. And in his talk with Adam, he says, you're going to eat as Esev Hasada. And the Medrash has such a dramatic presentation of Adam's reaction when he hears that he's only going to eat Esev Hasada. His eyes well up with tears, and Adam cries out, I and my donkey are supposed to eat from the same feeding trough? What am I, an animal? That I eat Esev Hasada? That I eat the grass that grows in the field? All of a sudden I'm treated like an animal? Meaning he viewed that punishment as equating him with animals. But that's very, very strange, because we just got through saying that Adam wasn't eating meat and chicken yet anyway. That didn't happen till the Mabul. So what was he so upset about? That's what he was already doing. He was already a vegetarian. So why is it so upsetting to him to find out that he eats as Esev Hasada? So again, our questions are basically two questions. Number one, why is it that in Judaism we have categories that separate that which grows from the ground and is a grain versus that which grows from the ground and is a fruit? Secondly, why is it that when Adam was told he's going to only eat Esev Hasada, he said, what am I, an animal, that I have to eat Esev Hasada? That's what you were eating anyway. You were only eating that which grows from the ground anyway. So Rav Lapiansky develops the following idea. He points out that the difference between grain on the one hand and fruit on the other is that grain requires a significant amount of toil to make them edible. Grains are not inherently edible. You have to work on them. You have to grind and then sift, and there are a whole series of malachos that you have to do. fruits are ready to pluck off of the tree and eat as is. You pass by a tree with fruits that are growing on the tree. You can pluck one off and just take a bite out of it. It's ready to be enjoyed. When we describe the definition of malacha for Shabbos, for example, the Mishnah has a whole series of malachos called Sidur de Pas. A whole series of malachos that start with harvesting the grain until you end up with baking the bread. And there's a whole bunch of malachos. It's the definition of malacha. How you make bread is part of the definition of malacha on Shabbos. It is an avoda. It is serious. It is not easy. It takes time. I often wonder, like, how did they figure it out even, right? You ever wonder, like, who's the first person that saw a coffee bean and said, you know what? If we grind that up and pour some really hot water on it, and then filter out that which we ground up, that would be a real pick-me-up in the morning. I mean, I'm thankful that someone did discover it. I just don't know how someone discovered that. So how they discovered that you're supposed to make bread out of wheat that grows, I would have stepped all over it. I would have said, okay, this is just something filler for a mattress cushion or something like that. It's a filler type of thing. I never would have imagined that it's something that you can make food out of. You look at fruit from a tree, it's obvious that it's food. It's color. It's colorful. It smells good. There's texture to it, and if you try to take a bite, it will be delicious. You look at a grain and you try to take a bite, it's disgusting. You can't eat it that way. It involves a lot of work. The Gemara says that in the times of Mashiach, there are going to be fresh rolls growing on trees. That's a very fascinating imagery. Fresh rolls growing on trees, what does that mean? The idea is that all of the effort that's currently necessary to turn grain into something edible is no longer going to be necessary when Mashiach comes. Even the terminology, when we describe something as coming easily, something that, you know, just happens, right? If you spend too much money when you were a teenager or something on your father's credit card, what was the line? What do you think? Money grows on trees, right? What does he mean? No, why would I think money grows on trees? What am I, an idiot? I don't think money grows on trees. Why are you saying that? No, because grows on trees is a way that we express something that comes easily. So what Chazal are telling us is that which we have to work so hard for, to take a stalk of wheat and somehow turn that into a delicious roll, in the times of Mashiach, you won't have to work for that. That's going to be automatic. It's going to grow on a tree. It's going to be just like an apple. It's an expression that describes that which comes easily. So this is the fundamental distinction, and now we understand a little bit of why we would make categories. There are those things that grow from the ground that are ready to go, ready to eat, and there are those things that grow from the ground that will involve a great deal of toil. Rav Tzadik HaKohen writes in Pri Tzadik that the punishment of Adam was that not that he wasn't going to be allowed to eat meat or fish or chicken. He wasn't eating that stuff anyway. The punishment was that you're going to eat esev hasadeh, that you're going to have to eat grains. And that's why he complained so bitterly. He said, I'm Adam. I should have everything prepared for me. I should have the most delicious fruits. Mikol Eitz Hagan. All of the trees that are growing, all these delicious looking things, I should be able to eat those things. Now, in order to have a properly balanced diet, in order to have enough carbs in my diet to be able to survive and to be able to have energy, I'm going to have to go to grain? I'm going to have to make bread? That pas b'melech tochal? That a person, ala lechem yichya Adam, that a person is going to have to live using lechem? What am I, an animal? That's for animals. Animals should have to eat grain. The extra work in producing bread and cakes is not fun. It's difficult to understand, though, why Adam viewed that as a demotion. Meaning, okay, so you'll have to work a little bit more. Why is that a demotion necessarily? Why is that like, why does that make him like an animal? Meaning, Adam HaRishon could have said, look, Hashem, I had things so easy. Why does life have to be so hard? Why does life have to be so challenging? It's not what he says. He says, what am I, an animal? I'm going to eat out of the same trough? So there's still something missing over here. Meaning where we are right now is we understand that there is some distinction between that which you have to work for, it doesn't just grow as a ready-made food, and that which you don't have to work for. That I get. But we're still missing a piece over here, because Adam is saying, "What am I, an animal? As an animal, I'm gonna eat grain like an animal. What's that about?" So Rav Lapyatsky explains that we can understand this based on the Gemara, a Braisa in Maseches Kiddushin, at the very, very end of Maseches Kiddushin, and Daf Pei Beis Amud Beis. The Braisa tells us that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar was commenting about how different people make a living. You know, the Mishnah at the very end of Kiddushin talks about how a person should teach their child an umnas nekiya vekala. You should always teach them an easy and light kind of profession, a cushy kind of job where you can make your money without working too hard and without putting yourself in compromising positions with people of the opposite gender and things of that nature. So the Mishnah talks about, you know, what kind of professions are the right kinds of professions, and the Braisa elaborates. And Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar comments. He says, "Miyamai lo ra'isi tzvi kayotz va'ari saval v'shuel chenveni." He said, "I never saw an animal have to struggle for its living. I never saw an animal that worked as an accountant or a lawyer or a doctor. I never saw an animal administrate a nursing home. I never saw, did I cover all the Jewish jobs? I never saw an animal as an OT, a PT, whatever. I've never seen an animal do any of these things. And somehow they get their food. They find it shalobitzar. Vehim lo nivru el shem sheni. And why are animals here? They're only here to serve me. Va'ani nivresi l'shamesh shizkoni. I was created to be meshamesh the ribono shalom. So ma elu shalom nivru el l'sham sheni misparnes in shalom b'tzar. Va'ani she nivresi l'shamesh shizkoni enu din shizparnes shalom b'tzar. So really, by all rights, if animals were only here to serve me, get to have an easy time of it, so I, who am the boss, you know, who is the one being served by all these animals, I should have an easy time with parnasa. So why is it that people find parnasa so hard? So Rabbi Shimon Elazar says, I know exactly why. Elo shahari osi es ma'asai v'kipachti es parnasasi. I have done averos, and because of that, I'm no longer entitled to an easy parnasa. What exactly does that mean? Because I've done averos, I would think because I've done averos, I deserve punishment. Because I've done averos, there's going to be some sort of onesh, either in Bezen Shalmata or in Bezen Shalmaila. Why is it specifically that I have to work for a living because I've done averos? Rav Lapiansky explains that there are two areas of human endeavor. First, there are those areas that a person is supposed to realize his potential in. A person is supposed to work and realize their what they can accomplish in this world. That's where we are going to put in our amelus, our yegiya. That's where we're going to put in our effort. If our potential, if our greatest contribution to humanity is going to be curing an illness, then we are going to put a lot of work into curing an illness. If our greatest contribution to humanity is going to be raising children, the al pi derech haTorah, we're going to put in a lot of work to raise children al pi derech haTorah. If our greatest contribution to humanity is going to be doing great acts of kindness or developing chesed organizations, we're going to put in a lot of work in there. That is where the sweat comes. But then there are those areas that we just have to do because you need to survive. And in an ideal world, if we're really, really putting in our effort in that which is our primary avoda, in that which is our mission on this world, then those other areas where you just need to live, where you just need to make a living, you just need to be able to have food, you need to be able to have shelter, that should come easily. That should come without any toil. A person has to eat in order to live. So Hashem makes food available and frees up the person's energies and attention to focus on what the person really needs to do to achieve in Avodas Hashem. So Rabbi Shimon Elazar is saying, by rights, my efforts should not be involved in Parnasa. My efforts should be in serving Hashem. My efforts should be in being mechadish chidushei Torah. My efforts should be in doing acts of gemilas chasadim. My efforts should be in performing mitzvos with great precision and great care and great kavana. But Rabbi Shimon Elazar says, I know why I have to work for parnasa. I have to work for parnasa because I'm lacking in my service of Hashem. Service of Hashem is not my sole focus. And therefore, the efforts and the toils are going to have to come in other areas of life as well, such as making a living. And that's likely what we mean when we say, Anu amelim, vehem amelim. We're destined to work. No matter what we do in life, we're destined to work. Our accomplishments in life are only going to come through those areas that we work on. But we get to choose where we have the amelus. We get to choose where we put our focus. And if we focus our amelus on that which will enhance our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, if that's the primary focus of our life, then the rest of it, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I'll make sure that happens. The rest of it will come a lot easier. You know, we read in this week's Parsha, in Parshas Yisrael, Vayichan Shem Yisrael Neged Ahar, that Klal Yisrael encamped by the mountain, but not Vayachanu, rather Vayichan. And Rashi famously comments, Ki Ish Echad B'Lev Echad. I just heard on my drive over this evening that from Rabbi Saul Reisman on the OU's All Parsha app, Rabbi Reisman pointed out, you know, it never struck me. Isn't that a repetitive phrase? Ki'ishachad b'levechad. Once you're ki'ishachad, you have levechad. Right? That's what an ishachad is. One person has one heart. If a person has multiple hearts, then it's probably very dangerous, I would imagine. That's not a good condition to have. So isn't ki'ishachad by definition levechad? So he said, no, very often, you could have a person, but he has his heart is in multiple places. He doesn't have a levechad. You have a person who's scattered. They're all over the place. And they're living a life where energies are expended unnecessarily in places that are not their primary point of focus. A good friend of mine told me that there was Warren Buffett or maybe some other billionaire who asked one of his employees, someone asked him for advice in how to succeed in life. So he said, I'll tell you what, I'll meet you next week. Just come into the meeting with a list of the top 10 areas that you want to succeed in, the top 10 goals that you have. And the fellow came in and he brought his list of 10 goals. And the boss said to him, okay, he takes out a pen and he crosses out numbers 4 through 10. He says, those aren't goals, those are distractions. 1, 2, and 3, those are your goals. A person is not always a lev echad. A person very often could be an ish echad, but many, many levavos all over the place. So there are a lot of things that have to get done in life. But where's our focus? Where's our amelus? We get to choose where we put our amelus. And when we put all this together, we come to the inescapable conclusion that fruits represent the food that one consumes when we're doing the Ratzon Hashem. Because they come easily, they're prepared for us. It's Hashem's way of saying, I see that you're using your energy on other things. It shouldn't have to be in the production of food. The food is there for you. Grains are food that represent those times that we're going to have to toil for basic sustenance because we've proven ourselves incapable of being singularly focused on Avodas Hashem. And Hashem says you are destined to a life of Amelus, and therefore this is where your Amelus is going to come. And Rav Lapiansky suggests that this explains the Shita, such an unusual Shita. You know, there's Machlokas in the Gemara, what type of tree the Eitz Hadas was. You know what opinion does not appear in the Gemara? No opinion says that it was an apple tree. That Michelangelo made up in the Sistine Chapel, it doesn't say anywhere that it's an apple tree. It was not an apple tree. But what was it? Maybe it was an Esrog tree. Maybe it was a grapevine. Okay, you can call those things trees. You know, there's a shita that says that it's a chita, that it's a wheat. How do you get away with calling that a tree? How can you call a stalk of wheat a tree? How could that be the Eitz Hadas, Tov V'Ra? How's that even a possibility? But maybe this is exactly what it means. Before the chet, chita was in fact a tree. I mean, just like in the times of Mashiach, there are going to be fresh rolls growing on trees. Maybe prior to the chet Adam Arishon, there were fresh rolls growing on trees, meaning the chita didn't come in the form that we have it. The chita came in the form of the smell when you walk into a bakery and you have that smell of fresh bread or fresh rolls coming out of the oven. And it's so appealing and enticing, like a fruit is, where it's ready to go and it's appealing and it's enticing. And that's what the Eitz Hadas was at that time. And because of the sin of the Eitz Hadas, we've proven that we're not able to focus on that which is important, to put our amelus on that which is critical, on that which is important in life. And because of that, Hashem says, your amelus is going to come from elsewhere. It's going to be Esav Hasada. In fact, not only should our efforts be focused on Avodah Hashem, but the entire Bria depends on it and supports it. You know, the Ramchal writes that when we bring ourselves closer to Hashem, we bring the entire world along with us closer to perfection. See, the world can't achieve perfection on its own. Humanity, as Bali Bechira, as people who can choose how to behave, we can achieve perfection and therefore bring the rest of the world to perfection along with us. So the entire Bria is interested in supporting the human endeavor to achieve Dveikos Hashem. Right? What was Rabbi Shimon Lazar's line? That Heim Lo Nivru Elul They are all created. What's they? All the animal world, all of plant life, All of it is created l'sham sheni, to serve me. That's what Chazal tells us. That's why Adam Rishon was created last. Because Hashem is saying, everything that's here, these are your tools. These are your helping hands. These are what's going to encourage you. These are what's going to enable you to achieve your goal, because it's in their interest that you achieve your goal. They only achieve perfection when you achieve perfection. Creation willingly bends to a person's will. And that's why fruit are fragrant and have attractive colors. They're screaming out to us that we should take them and we should benefit from them. And when we eat fruit, we expose a seed. And when you discard that seed, it allows a tree to grow somewhere else. When a person eats a plant, he destroys it. When he eats a stalk of wheat, that's it. That stalk of wheat is gone. When you eat a fruit, you help propagate and perpetuate the species by carrying the seed further afield and inadvertently leaving the seed to sprout somewhere else. The very act of eating the fruit, of consuming the fruit, not only doesn't destroy the trees, it actually multiplies the trees. Any time that a tzaddik takes from that which the world is bending over backwards to offer him, he's not just taking, he's bringing out more potential for the world to flourish. The seeds of the apple are the perfect example of latent potential. You know, the Bala Tanya, the Alter Rebbe in Perek Chavdalet of Tanya, explains that the Yatush is the lowest of all creatures, the gnat, because it's machnis ve'eino motzi. It absorbs, it takes in, but it doesn't produce anything. It doesn't even produce fertilizer like an animal would. However, the tzaddik is always giving. The tzaddik, even when he's taking, he's giving. If the tzaddik is eating a fruit, then that's going to create a new tree somewhere else. Gemara in Kiddushin talks about an Adam Chashuv being Mekadesh Anisha with Hana'a that he has in giving, that she has in giving him something. That when one is Mahana Etzadik, they feel that they're enhancing the Bria, that they're fulfilling their potential. So even when the Tzadik is giving, is taking, he's really giving. Because that's the goal. The goal is all of Bria is here for humanity. It's all so we can be Tzadikim Vitzitkanios. All of Bria is meant to bend over backwards to enable us to do that. And that's the distinction between grain and fruit, and that's why it's such a critical distinction. Fruit is the food of the tzaddik. Grain is the food of the sinner. It's a bidiyavet food. Fruit represents Hashem providing for us easily while we focus our energies on relating to Him. It's the power of Einod Milvado. The greater our recognition of Hashem, the less that things in this world can get in our way and bother us. The reason Adam was so upset when he found out that he'd be eating grain was that it represents a failure of his life's mission. Now he's like the animal that has no capacity for meaningful avodas Hashem. So the job of the Jew is to be an Eitz HaSadeh. It's to elevate the entire world by focusing on what he was put on this earth to do, to serve our Creator. To the extent that man sins, the use of the world's goods become consumptive and not beneficial, and the earth will only share its goodness begrudgingly. The concept of Adam La'omel Yulad is a truism. We are here to work. There is no such thing as an easy life. However, we get to choose where we want our amelus to be, whether it should be amel in Torah and mitzvos and chesed and dveikus b'Hashem, or amel in chasing brand name clothing and nice vacations, etc. The world is eager for us to make those right choices, to produce the most delectable peiros ilan, and Be'ezus Hashem to bring us to that day when delicious fresh rolls will literally grow on trees. Everyone have a wonderful evening, and thank you so much for joining me this evening.